Welcome back to Maryland Morning. I'm Sheila Cast. On April 12th, Baltimore police officers made eye contact with Freddie Gray at North Avenue and Mount Street. Gray ran, the police chased, and you know the rest of the story. The 25-year-old Gray suffered a spinal injury while in police custody and died a week later. Baltimore State's Attorney Marilyn Mosby, in announcing charges against the officers last Friday, said the officers did not have probable cause to arrest Gray. Even before the Freddie Gray case, the state's attorney's office wanted Baltimore police to bring more knowledge to deciding when and how to stop someone on the street and what makes a valid arrest. The city has approved $50,000 to put 300 police officers through 12 hours of training. The lawyer who created the training, Brian Warnken, joins us by phone to talk about it. He's a professor at the University of Baltimore Law School and the senior member of Warnken Attorneys at Law, which he founded with his wife. Welcome to the show.
Thanks, Sheila. It's Byron, not Brian.
Oh, excuse me.
No problem.
It's right there in front of me, and I just pronounced it wrong.
Not a problem.
Thanks for setting me straight. Lay out for me what these trainings will look like.
Well, what they will look like is that there will be probably 30 to 35 police officers in any given training session. There will be 8 to 10 cycles. Each cycle will have 30 to 35 different officers. I don't select the officers. And in each cycle, I will put on three four-hour blocks. The first one will be what I call cars, cops, and stops, having to do with every conceivable interaction of a law enforcement officer and a citizen in a vehicular context. And I don't know about you, but I certainly know that most likely, if a police officer is going to interact with me, it's probably going to be in a vehicular context.
Even in the city?
Oh, everywhere. In other words, probably in the city, you might have a larger percentage of interaction. But the point is, we all drive cars. And there's a whole body of law relating to what police may and may not do in a vehicular context. And that will be a four-hour program. I will put on a hypothetical problem in the last hour that will walk the police through every one of the conceivable issues. The second topic will be obtaining and executing arrest warrants and search warrants. And that one will also be a four-hour program, and that one also will have a scenario of obtaining and executing a search warrant in the last hour of the program. The third and final topic will deal with preparation for and conducting courtroom testimony. If I'm an officer and I approach the scene and I pull out a pad and I start taking notes, I'm in court right now because everything I say or do is eventually going to be a matter of public record. So, for example, if I testify to fact X at trial, but fact X does not appear in my report that was issued just a couple hours after the event, how do I know now, 4 months later, what I didn't think important enough to write down then? So in any event, we work through all the things to prepare for, which has to do with having the police work with the assistant state's attorney in that case.
The public, of course, has become much more interested in how police conduct stops because of the Freddie Gray case. What is the standard for police to stop someone
in order for a police officer to constitutionally conduct a stop? And a stop means that I am encountering you and I'm telling you that you're not free to go. I may do that only if I have reasonable, articulable suspicion that a criminal law is being violated or if a felony has been violated and or that traffic regulations are being violated, including not just moving violations, but failure to have a rear view mirror, failure to have a light on. So in any event, mostly it's reasonable suspicion. And suspicion is more than just a hunch, but it's less than probable cause. That's what it takes for me to interact with you if I'm the police officer. Now, once I do decide to interact with you, I must, with reasonable speed, take the steps to confirm or dispel my suspicion. And if I dispel my suspicion, I must let you go, or it will be deemed to be an illegal arrest. If I confirm my suspicion, then I may arrest you. So it's stop is one level, arrest is the other.
In your view, was the stop of Freddie Gray legal?
I don't know. I only know what I'm hearing from the media. What I can tell you is Maryland law, and maybe this kind of implicitly answers your question, is that Maryland law says, I may not stop you solely because you ran when you saw me. However, if I have that plus some additional things, now I don't know whether one or more of the officers was aware that this individual had numerous drug offenses and was currently facing trial, but those extra facts would weigh in and may permit a stop where there otherwise wouldn't be one.
Do you think the recent attention to police arrests will change how or when police arrest people in Baltimore?
Well, I can't imagine that it will not, because certainly, you know, everybody has an opinion. So what we're doing is trying to better educate police. I mean, if anyone needs to know when you can arrest, when you can stop, it's the police. And I will work through every conceivable variation on that, trying to make them educated enough so as to decrease the chance of their doing things incorrect. But what it certainly shows is that you, the media, the public, obviously there's going to be a much higher level of scrutiny on police conduct.
I appreciate you talking to us about it. Thank you.
You bet, Sheila.
Good luck in the training.
Thanks.
Byron Warnken, University of Baltimore law professor, senior member at Warnken Attorneys at Law. We have a link at our website, wipr.org/Maryland Morning, to a brochure on the Warnken website titled Fourth Amendment, Cars, Cops, and Stops. That's at wipr.org/Maryland Morning. Yesterday, we spoke with Lawrence Brown, an assistant professor in the School of Community Health and Policy at Morgan State University, about how police treated protesters in Baltimore's Hamden neighborhood and at Pennsylvania and North Avenues. Video showed a police officer in Hamden, a mostly white neighborhood, politely asking the protesters, who were white, three times to leave. That same evening at Penn North, a protester was pepper sprayed and pulled to the ground. Kathleen Truelove, who lives in Baltimore, emailed us to say it's unfair to compare the two protests. Truelove wrote, quote, "To defy the curfew in Hamden and at Pennsylvania North Avenues is a false comparison. Of course the police were more sensitive at the epicenter of the civil unrest. There was no rioting in Hamden. To protest in a comparable mostly black neighborhood would have been more instructive. How about somewhere in northeast Baltimore?" she asked. We appreciate all the listeners who commented on that conversation, and we'd love to hear from you. If you've got thoughts on something you heard in today's show, send us an email, mdmorning@wipr.org. Maryland Morning is an original production
of Your Public Radio,
WYPR,
in Baltimore.
The show is produced by Matt Purdy
and Jonna McCone.
We have production help from
Estelle Klein.
Nathan Sterner directs and engineers.
I'm Tom Hall.
And I'm Sheila Cast. On this day in Maryland history, 1922, Gloria Richardson was born in Baltimore. In the 1960s, she led the Cambridge Movement, a civil rights struggle on the Eastern Shore. In June 1963, the Cambridge protests escalated into a riot. Governor Miller Taws imposed martial law and sent in the National Guard, and U.S. Attorney General Robert F. Kennedy brokered a five-point Treaty of Cambridge that led to integration of the hospital, library, schools, and buses in Cambridge. We're back on Friday with more coverage of the Freddie Gray story. Please join us.